As the National Park Service celebrates its 100-year anniversary, we take a closer look at one of those parks here in Washington. Seattle writer Bruce Barcott has spent years exploring Mount Rainier National Park. In fact, he wrote a book about it, Measure of a Mountain. Barcott says there are two sides to Mount Rainier, the family-friendly picnic side and the harsh, unforgiving side.
It's this mountain where most of us who live here in Puget Sound gaze at it from afar and take it as a symbol of beauty. It's, for many of us, it's the reason we live here, in a way. It sums it all up. We're close to nature, and we see it every once in a while. Actually, I live on Bainbridge Island. I rode the ferry in this morning, and Rainier was sort of out like a ghost. You know, it was sort of there in the distance, but it was sort of hiding behind some haze. At the same time, when you get up close, it is a major, massive mountain with glaciers and falling rock and wilderness. And, you know, I wrote this book many years ago on Mount Rainier, and the sort of point of the book was to throw this naive narrator onto the mountain. And in a way, I'm lucky I didn't die. I was just put myself into the forest, into the high mountain meadows and onto the glaciers, and ultimately made a summit climb of Mount Rainier. But the more you spend time on the mountain, the more you have to treat it with respect and come away with an awe that is tinged with a little fear.
Most of us, almost all of us, are naive narrators when we say anything about Mount Rainier, right? Why did you want to end that naivete?
I was fascinated by the way in which people seemed to form this personal relationship with Mount Rainier. And even newcomers to the region would call it, oh, my mountain. My mountain is out. Oh, I love Mount Rainier. Have you ever been there? No, I've never been there, but I love it. It's like, why do we form this you know, pretended relationship with this mountain? So that was sort of the beginning of the journey, to try to answer that question of why we form this relationship with the mountain. And I think there's something about just the visual of Mount Rainier, and it's not a beautiful peak. It's not a perfect triangle. It's more like a slumped, melting piece of ice cream cone. But it does stand alone, and we tend to, you know, look up to the heavens, if you will, to think about things like the afterlife or our place in the universe. We tend not to gaze down at large holes and do that, mm-hmm. You know. And so it sort of inspires those thoughts in us. And I think that's a part of it.
You embedded yourself with search and rescue volunteers on Rainier. What did you learn doing that?
That was fascinating. That was I had set it up so I was working on a feature story about search and rescue in the national parks. So in, I think it was probably early fall, they had a search and rescue camp come up. There was a couple, they were overdue. It was probably Monday, maybe Tuesday. You know, it's always somebody's coworker calls in because they're not showing up at their desk. And that was the case here. They had gone up the mountain via the Nisqually Glacier route, so people were out looking for them. And I was sort of there in Longmire at the search and rescue headquarters, just watching all these people work, and they have a very elaborate protocol for doing what they do and sending out teams and this sort of thing. And we would get various reports coming back now and then throughout the morning. But at one point, there was a call from one of the ranger teams over the radio, and they said code black, which I don't know if it still is, but at the time it was code for, we have found a dead body. And they immediately said, but we don't think that it's the people we're looking for because it's a singular person. It's not a couple. And in fact, we know it's not the people we're looking for because it's been here a while. And it turned out that they had run across a snowboarder who had gone missing about a year or two earlier on the Nisqually Glacier. And he basically had gone up the mountain, the Camp Muir route, and gone off track and had fallen and died. And the mountain sort of kept him there for a couple of years. And usually the mountain will keep anybody who dies there pretty much forever. But it brought home to me the fact that there are a number of people who go up to the mountain and never come back. And it's ultimately unforgiving in that way. It's this thing of beauty that we love, but really the mountain really doesn't care about you. It doesn't care what weather, you know, rolls in on you, and it will roll in on you very quickly.
You summited Mount Rainier, and I'm always curious about that. I know lots of non-climbers, you know, who wanted to walk up that thing. And I haven't been that tempted because it seems like a long slog toward an almost predictable end when you compare it to all the trouble you're going through. It's not like serendipity. I came around the corner and oh my God.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, absolutely. And that is the experience. I mean, I wrote an entire book on Mount Rainier. I spent 3 years working on it. I summited once. And I had to will myself up the mountain during that climb because I didn't want to have to come back and do it again. I mean, I went up and trained hard for it. It's impossible to overtrain for that climb. And it is just a long slog up the mountain, up these glaciers, but it's not just a slog. There are dangerous parts. It's very, extremely risky. I went up with Rainier Mountaineering guides, and I was amazed at how much risk they took on every day as a part of their job. They made it as safe as possible, but it's not safe. There's a lot of risk involved. And then once you get up at the top, it's sort of this cream of wheat bowl of snow, and that's about it. You know, you can see a long ways in the distance, but you're so gassed by the time you get up there. You're so busted. And then you've got to get down safely, and that's going to require some energy as well. So I basically, you know, got up to the top, made a few notes, threw on my jacket. We sat around for about 20 minutes and shook hands, and then got ourselves back down the mountain.
This is about what I imagined. Yeah. You're not making me want to climb Mount Rainier.
No. In fact, one of the things I loved about Rainier was going up to about the 10,000-foot level. The summit is 14,411 feet. At the 10,000-foot level, there are two climbing camps on opposite sides of the mountain. And if you go up there, it's about the highest you can go kind of as a civilian. You don't have to have crampons or anything like that to get up there. It is a long hike. But once you're up there at 10,000 feet, you have most of what you experience higher on the mountain, except, you know, you don't have the incredible pain and energy and drudgery of getting all the way back up, up and down. So I loved going up there and spending time up there.
Let's talk about Rainier as a national park, since this is kind of why we're talking about it again. National parks turning 100 years old. Who have you met in Rainier National Park that stuck with you?
People that always remain in my head are Åke and Branka Sundström, who were a couple from Europe. Branka actually survived the Holocaust, met her husband Åke after the war, and they moved over to Puget Sound. And they had retired at the very edge of the national park, and they would go up and they'd make that slog up to Camp Muir and back 50 times a year. I mean, for me to do it in my late 20s, I had to prepare for it. I was sore in bed the next day, always. They were doing it 50 times a year, and they went out with just the most amazing attitude. You know, I did that hike a couple times with Branka. You know, I'm a tall, thin man. I have a high metabolism. I need a lot of food. And Branka would always go up with a little bag of carrots. He'd say, "Oh, Bruce, you do not need that candy. You do not need that. Just have some carrots and continue on." I'm like, "Branka, I'm dying here." But she had the most amazing attitude. I said, "How do you do this time after time? I mean, it's the same route." And she says, "Oh, no. She says, "Every time you're in the mountains, you see the world with new eyes." And she really did. She went out and it was also true that the mountain changes so quickly through the seasons that you kind of do see it with new eyes every time you go out. So she remains with me. Åke passed away about 6 years ago, but Branka is still out there going. There was actually an article that she went up to Camp Muir a few weeks ago to celebrate probably her 92nd birthday, but she's still going strong.
So for somebody who hasn't been to Rainier National Park yet, or rarely, give us a tip. What's something we should do?
On a sunny day, go to Paradise. I mean, it's going to be crowded. The parking lot's going to be full, but just go anyway and start at the parking lot and start walking up. And you, even though there will be many people there on a sunny summer afternoon, you are likely to run across a freaking marmot, you know, and it will put out this crazy high-pitched scream like, ee! I'm embarrassing myself trying to do it, but it's this high-pitched squeal, and it doesn't care that you're there, really. It's like it's getting on with the business of life. Or, you know, you may run across a crew of climbers coming down from a terribly difficult summit client and they're haggard and they're walking the same trail you are, and you might run across, you know, an Everest climber who's done, you know, the Himalayas 10 years, the last 12. Or you may run into, you know, a new family of immigrants from India who are there and seeing snow for the very first time in their lives. I can't tell you how many times I had that experience. It's just fantastic. But I think paradise is the place to start. There are plenty of other gems around the mountain, plenty of other entrances and ways to experience the mountain. But, you know, paradise still, it's like, you know, if you go to Yosemite, you've got to go see El Capitan. And if you go to Rainier, you've got to go up to paradise.
Seattle-based writer Bruce Barcott wrote the book, Measure of a Mountain, Beauty and Terror on Mount Rainier.